Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Now you're welcome along to the football show. We will talk to Andy Mitten at full time from Old Trafford, where currently the Jesse Lingard derby remains nil all and continues without Jesse Lingard. This is Manchester United in the fifth round of the FA Cup against West Ham. In the meantime, Daniel McDonnell of the Irish Independent, hello.
Hi, Joe.
So much going on. Can I start with 2 points of order?
Go on.
2 points of order which made my heart swoon, Dan.
Swoon? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, this is, you're a man who strikes me as you don't swoon often. But anyway.
I swoon more than you think.
Well, yeah, okay. Move on to the 2 points.
Point of order number one, and I will be remonstrating with Richie McCormack at the end of the show as to why this wasn't item number one in his news round this evening. Wes Hoolihan. Okay. Wes Hoolihan has been recognised for his superb form with Cambridge. He's received a nomination, League Two Player of the Month Award for January. Hoolihan, who turns 39 in May, has been a key playmaker during a 7-match unbeaten run, which has helped his side climb to top of the table. The former, that's the only downside to this, the former Republic of Ireland international, contributed 2 goals and 2 assists while making 5 appearances last month for Cambridge, who are on course for a promotion that would see them play in the third tier of English football for the first time in 19 years. Now, that made me swoon when I read that.
Swoon.
Oh, my God.
I leaned back
in my chair and I put a hand up and I said, Wes, you are just the man. And I swooned.
Have you not seen there was footage going round of one of his recent performances?
Yeah, I saw it.
And he has a bit of his lockdown hair now and stuff, and he's just it's Wes Hoolihan doing what he does. Yeah. So it's good to have a couple of players around that are, I think, maybe still older than us playing outfield. So, you know, still not retired yet. But he's down in Australia for a while, and I think the pandemic sort of cut that short, really. Didn't necessarily get the chance to do what he would have wanted to do down there, but he's still got it.
He sure does. He'll never lose it. He'll never lose it. I mean, am I mad to think he could do a job in March? I know I am, but the heart wants it.
Jesus Christ, Joe. I mean, I suppose there's a refreshing degree of normality if we start talking about bemoaning, Wes not being involved and he should have more caps. You know, the world that we know isn't all gone if we start debating that again. You know, so maybe we can bring it back to the debate. I suspect not, you know, but it's... he has that ability that he can probably play for as long as he wants, really, because he was always incredibly fit as well. That's the thing, and is incredibly fit. Like, as maybe wasn't the best pro he could have been in his younger days, and probably admitted that. But actually, people who played with him would say, you know, just actually his energy, his battery levels would be pretty high.
Point of order number two.
How frustrated would you be if you were in Chris Wilder's shoes and that had been warded against you?
We'd want to be a manager. You know, it's hard to win football
you do.
Matches.
You told me you're taking me as an assistant. What are you talking about?
Listen, just get my head around you as a management duo with Roy.
The kit man.
Come on.
I thought you didn't like the Keane and Micah Richards thing. Or do you like it? You were talking
I like
about
it. Miguel Delaney didn't like it. I liked it.
Oh, okay. You're well up for that, yeah.
The visuals don't quite work. There's a bit in it after the initial. You said I was going to be kit man, where Roy tries to get back on track and then just can't. And honestly, you can see the 11-year-old boy in Roy again. And it's a beautiful thing.
But there's always the thing about Roy, didn't he? Did he always like... This whole thing about Roy getting on with Micah Richards shouldn't be a massive surprise to people, because even at various times in his playing career, he would have had, like, was it like Lee Sharp when he was younger, and even he got on quite well with Dwight York, and sometimes, like, you know, he's not necessarily, he sort of enjoyed the company of people that they wouldn't expect. You wouldn't typically expect the character of Roy Keane to enjoy the company
of. He loves all the masters at United, traditionally. So yeah, Lee Sharp, 100%, Dwight York, big time. When Mark Bosnich turned up like an hour late for training on his first day at the club, Keane couldn't help but find him kind of funny underneath it all. Ryan Giggs and Nicky Butt, deadly duo. He was always in photos with those two. Right through the 90s, getting off a bus, arriving at a hotel, whatever, Keane, Nicky Butt, Giggs, thick as thieves, and having, you know, good time. So he loves a messer. I mean, people are amazed he likes Micah Richards, but I mean,
yeah, there's some kind of psychoanalysis you can probably do in this, and someone probably will. To what does this really say? You know, what does this mean? Yes. When at the same time he'll bomb someone out of a club for being 5 minutes late for a bus. You know, so like, I mean, make sense of that one.
They showed him the video as well. Have you seen this? I don't have audio of this, by the way, but they showed him the video of the PlayStation game, I guess, where Roy Keane's character is...
Oh, no, I didn't. I'd assume they'd put it to him, yeah.
Yeah, they did. So if people haven't seen this, I guess not everyone's bothered with social media, and they're right too. There's a video of Roy Keane's PlayStation version dancing after scoring a goal, presumably to ABBA, and, I mean, really going for it. Really going for it. So Micah Richards tempted everybody on Sunday night by saying... It's coming. You know, I've done it. The deed is done. And Twitter promptly sat up and said, Micah, we need to see this very quickly. And then it showed Roy in the Sky studio watching it. Zero reaction. In fact, turns away at the end. And Micah Richards laughing as only Micah Richards can. And then weirdly, like, the camera spins around and there's Graeme Souness also breaking his backside laughing. I mean, it's good times in that Sky studio.
It is. Well, I did mention it on Saturday a couple of weeks ago. I did a piece where I sort of spoke to Damien Delaney, amongst others. Like, Roy Keane is now 10 years out of management. Like, it's over 10 years since he last managed a game at any level, which is mad, really, isn't it? That is, like, I know he's obviously been assistant manager in a couple of places. Of course, I mean, we know that very well here. But it's 10 years since Roy Keane picked a team, gave a team talk. It's sort of, it's mad, really, isn't it?
Well, I mean, he won't like it, but he's found his calling, his post.
But even that original clip, you know, the original line of that, I mean, the whole premise of it is Souness saying, well, you do want to go back into management. And Keane has said this, and like, this is, you know, this was reported recently enough that Sky people seem to know he wants to go back into management. Yeah. So clearly he's probably saying it in their production chats or whatever. Oh, listen, you won't have me forever. But yet, like, where's this job coming? Like, you're looking at... I think I'm just checking. I think Cardiff, you know, Mick McCarthy again. I know we always go from Roy Keane to Mick McCarthy, but you know, Mick McCarthy's had a nightmare in Cyprus. He's gone straight into another gig and he's winning matches in the Championship tonight. You know, Roy Keane's is banter clips. You know, so like, I'm sure he would rather be involved in football, to be honest.
Hmm. This match this evening, nil all between Manchester United and West Ham. 78 minutes in the clock. There's now some Irish interest up front for West Ham.
Yeah, so Meepo Adebayo has come on. And there was at the start of the night, you could see there was a chance this would happen because Mikel Antonio is not involved. And they started with Yarmolenko up front, so who's not a natural striker. So he was the only central, basically, striker in the West Ham squad. And he played against Southend, I think, recently in the Cup. I'm sort of watching out of the corner of my eye here. He's had a couple of decent touches there. But basically... there was a strong chance he was going to feature. And you mentioned it's the Jesse Lingard derby, but it's a derby for him too, in the sense that he actually was at Manchester United and turned down a contract a couple of years back and went to West Ham, having scored quite a few goals for the Manchester United under 18 side. So he's back at his old stomping ground. So it's a big night for him. But yeah, it's a reflection of. I suppose how the personality of our of international teams, and particularly our Irish international teams, is going to change dramatically. And I suppose that the caveat is we're not maybe 100% sure that he's going to be 100% playing for Ireland, but because he is one of these players who, you know, he's from a sort of a, you know, Nigerian African heritage. He was raised in Tala, and he played for Crumlin United. He played for St Joseph's Boys. There's on social media tonight. There's people from Joseph's Boys like posting. Pictures of him, you know, playing in an under, you know, a national final, I think under 13 level, But his story is reasonably interesting. I think first Gavin Cooney did a decent piece on this in the 42 recently, that he moved to England with his family reasonably young to sign for Man City, but effectively that deal didn't go through because he maybe had moved too early, or Man City weren't 100% sure about where they stood on the legalities of signing someone who wasn't quite 16, I believe. And then he then did sign up and ended up playing for Manchester United, as I mentioned. And after a bit of a debate about what his future, he opted not to sign a new contract, went to West Ham where there was more opportunities. And as we can see now, like he's in the first team squad. He was the same age, you know, the same age group at underage level as Troy Parrott, who was obviously the big name, you know, for, I suppose, the new generation of Irish players. And, you know, Troy Parrott's making, you know, playing for Ipswich tonight in League One. And here's, you know, Meepo playing at Old Trafford. So it's funny how it works out. But he hasn't really been involved. He's played for Ireland under 16, under 17 level. And Jim Crawford had to speak about him recently, the 21s. But he hasn't been on the scene in the last year or two, really, at international level. And it's just, you know, it's obviously raised a couple of question marks. But I saw in that piece, his old coach at Joey's was saying, listen, if the FAI wanted him, if Ireland wanted him, he was sure that's where he would play. So he's very young. I just watched him now head the ball straight out of play. He's had a couple of nervous touches, but it's a big night for him.
A few things I want to talk to you about. Let's start with your story on the back page of the paper today. It's an interesting one. League of Ireland streaming in doubt after disappointing sales figures is the headline, Dan. To set the context here, people may vaguely remember this arising during the pandemic, whereby the remaining fixtures in the League of Ireland season, about half of them, I think, give or take, were going to be streamed. And it was Watch LOI was the headline for it, the streaming service. It was a collaboration with RTE and GAA Go. And I do remember at the time, I think Declan McBennett of RTE, the head of sport there, was saying this would be a bit of a litmus test, really, for interest in the league. And you have managed to get hold of the figures, and they're not phenomenal. They're certainly down on what privately was hoped for. So why don't you take us through where we are on this?
Yeah, no, like, so this has become a debate because obviously the Watch LOI service was essential to getting the 2020 season back on. And we had a situation where obviously all the games, well, there was a brief period where there was limited attendance, but pretty much all the games were behind closed doors. And, you know, clubs had season ticket holders who paid for season tickets, and, you know, you really needed some kind of streaming service. And because it was a very short season when it would come back, this service, as you mentioned, as you correctly say, was introduced as almost a test to see how we would get on. But in recent weeks, it's become clear, obviously, the 2021 season is starting in March. What's going to happen from a TV streaming perspective? Because I suppose we might have thought last summer that by March, maybe, you know, by February, March, we might be back to a situation where we'd have supporters in stadiums. Whereas now, unfortunately, we know that it's going to be some time before we have spectators back in stadiums in Ireland. And that's just a sad fact. So what happens? Like, what are they going to do with the 2021 season? And effectively, what's happened is that the people behind this service, as you mentioned, the various partners, they've reached the conclusion that with the sales figures for it last year, and the additional cost of a full season, you know, a full season of 36 games in the Premier Division, like every game was covered on Watch LOI. That'd be 180 games. The cost of covering 180 games would be quite substantial. I gather it was somewhat north of sort of 300,000 to do 85 games. So people can do the sums of what it would cost to do 180. And yet the subscription numbers just weren't good enough. There was 11,000 paying customers, of which less than half actually bought a season pass. Others bought a sort of, you know, just games on a sort of a la carte basis, I guess. Now, there was season ticket holders separate to that who got free access, another 6,000 or so of them. But yeah, as you mentioned, like, the one thing I would say, obviously, subscriber services, like, it's, you know, sometimes people would be surprised what is a good figure, you know, like, and I know this from working in the media industry, like, you know, and even see in England, like, the Sky Sports attendances, you know, so Sky Sports viewership relative to population is actually very, very low. But they had a target, maybe, or not really a target, but they hoped around 20,000 people would pay for it. And obviously, that wasn't the case. It was 11,000. And really, what's happened now is that they realise that this season they can't do something like that again because it's not viable. So what do you do? Are you now in a situation where the league starts and yet some of the games no one will be able to see them? That's the problem that we face. So there's layers to it, you know, there's layers to it.
In your piece, you say the Irish Independent has learned close to 4,700 buyers bought a season pass, which was at about €55 for Irish customers. So for €55, you would have got every single one of the 85 games.
Yeah, yeah. And that was more than what was even flagged initially. Listen, it was a very good deal. Like, listen, there's an irony here about us doing an audio / visual production now, like talking about, well, what was the service like? You know, as you know, like there would have been complaints about aspects of it, but personally, I did actually feel the service was pretty good. Like, you know, it was pretty reliable. Yes, there were aspects of it that could have been better. And the argument that has been made by people is that, well, maybe if they'd done more with it, like more glitzy coverage, you know, more pundits, so there was no co-commentators, would they have attracted more? Now, I'm not convinced by that. Like, I think what we have here, like, there's a problem really here, and we notice at the moment, the longer that this goes on, like, a lot of people in their lives now are paying for, like, multiple subscriptions, be it Sky, be it, if you want to catch up with all the Premier League now, there's BT, and there's, you know, there's Netflix and whatever sort of entertainment stuff you're doing. And, like, a big selling point of the League of Ireland, and in fact, the irony, I mentioned it in another piece today, that before the pandemic, I actually felt there was a buzz in terms of going to games that maybe was starting to build again. I mentioned Bowes, like they were sold out all the time. And the whole point was you were selling the experience of going to a live game. Like that was the selling point of the League of Ireland. You're like, we know that it's not going to be for everyone. And there will be people listening to this who just have their mind, nah, I don't want to watch it, the level isn't for me. That's their opinion. It's a completely fair opinion. But sometimes, you know, you would try and tackle that and say yes, but okay, we can watch the game on TV, but you can get out to a stadium and sample the atmosphere, and it's something that's real, you know, it's something that's, you know, go to a game and go for a few drinks or whatever. And I feel that, you know, attendances were starting to lift steadily because there was a sense that clubs were beginning to tap into that. And yet then all of a sudden you flip to a scenario where you're trying to sell it behind closed doors with no stadiums, with no atmosphere, and think that this is going to attract a new audience. Like, that's unfortunately probably not realistic. Like, we know last year when there was no football on, yeah, people were watching Belarus and then the Bundesliga came back and people were watching that for a couple of weeks. But the minute the Premier League came back and people's habits came back, it's on 7 days a week. It's very hard to run a concurrent subscription service to get people to watch some extra football that, you know, that maybe, you know, that really it's not necessarily the most visually appealing when there's no one in the stadium. And there is a debate. At the same time, I don't think all the people who are interested subscribe to it. And there's obviously issues around that and with people watching it in other ways and means or sharing it or whatever. But the fundamental problem, let's just strip it away here, like, you know, the layers of debate, is that not enough people are committed enough to want to pay for that kind of service, much as I wish that wasn't the case. And the problem that we face for, like, smaller leagues in a lot of places is that the longer stadiums are shut, it's hard for them, because you're competing with all the other closed doors football that's on everywhere else in the world.
What is the TV deal ahead of this season?
Well, it hasn't been confirmed. Like, this is the problem, really. There was a meeting last week where the FAI, and this is partly what inspired this, but that the FAI last week told clubs, listen, this Watch LOI service doesn't appear to be commercially viable over a full season. There is an offer there that they would do around a third of the games on the service, but they've said they're looking at 7 different options. Now, I think it's very possible whatever they do streaming-wise, RTE and maybe one other channel, be it Air or whatever, will show a certain amount of games. Mm-hmm. But there's a question is, do clubs want to, you know, try and do their own business, you know, try and do their own streaming service? Do you want to do it, you know, do you make that free? Do you see what happens? Like, but it's, you know, there's other third party companies, I think, that have approached the FAI and would like to have a crack at it. But it's all a bit up in the air. And like some clubs that I spoke to, you know, they've made the point that they would like the opportunity that if they're playing, if it's a home match behind closed doors, they would like to like sell tickets for that match as if it was a home game. So if you're a smaller team at home to say like Shamrock Rovers team, probably with the biggest fan base, that for someone to buy the stream to that game, the money goes to the home side, if you know what I mean. As we've seen in England with some of these FA Cup ties, you know, where clubs sold tickets for them. But it's hard. Like, it's really, it's difficult. And if we can extend this to a lot of debates in our life at the moment, like, we all heard predictions about how long things would go on for, you know, but the longer this goes on, the harder it is, because, you know, something was a short-term stopgap. Now you're thinking, well, if this isn't there, like, what happens? You know, where's our visibility? You know, what do we do for other sponsorships around that and stuff? So it's a tough time for, like, you know, it's great to be able to watch, like, the big leagues that are very well served. But for smaller leagues, you know, such as our own, it's obviously, it's a worrying period.
Yeah, devastating. So that league needs to be bailed out again in a big way this year.
Yeah, and listen, that is ongoing. To be fair, there was a meeting last week and Jack Chambers made the point, you know, that they are willing to support it. The FAI have made a commitment to underwrite an amount of money. And I think there's enough will to dare to do what needs to be done to get it going, to get the football played. But obviously, that's just to survive. Mm-hmm. You know, there's survival and then there's trying to thrive as well. And it's funny, in the news round earlier, like, you were talking about Simon Zeebo coming home. And I'm very much aware that, like, there's other sports, there are a few of issues with player contracts and all of this. Like, there's a lot of other sports in the same boat, like basketball and all, like, that are shut down. And so I think that they will get something. But again, it's just to like, how long does it take to recover from this, even if you do enough to get through it? And that's the fear, you know. I'm confident, by the way, that whenever stadiums do open, I think there'll be a big move towards people wanting to get out and go again and, you know, to be a part of it. And that's an opportunity. But how long does it take to get to there, and what's the cost of that? That's the problem.
I heard Sam McConkie today interviewed in The Last Word, and he was talking about 3 to 5 years with this thing.
Yeah, no, I heard. Listen, yeah, I hate those type of... listen, he's doing what he has to do, and he can only give the opinion that he's asked for. Yeah. But, like, these predictions are hard going for people, and I don't want to go down that road. But I think we all acknowledge that probably at times we've... You know, I definitely had discussions about, you know, and I'm sure we did here, listen, there'll be fans maybe at stadiums by such and such a time. And it just keeps getting pushed further and further and further back. Now, I also think part of that as well is that I don't think you don't get the sense from, say, the officialdom that outdoor sports events, that there's a red flag over them that you could question it. You know, it doesn't seem to be as high up the list. You could argue the case that it should be, but I accept that you enter into whataboutery territory with that. But, like, you know, there are professional sports or semi-professional sports in this country who, like, really rely on these things. And sometimes I felt that a lot of debate around attendances, there's a real GAA focus on it. But I think there's other sports who really rely on paid, you know, paying players and certain amount of consistency through the gates, not just all Ireland finals, but games on a regular basis that need it. But listen, we're some way from that, Joe. We really are some way from that.
We sure are. Yeah. Short ad break. It's gone full time, by the way, at Old Trafford. There's going to be extra time, nil all, between Manchester United and West Ham. Short break, more with Dan in a second. Andy Mitten will join us at some stage as well between now and 10.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
Welcome back. So nil all at Old Trafford. Extra time about to begin between Manchester United and West Ham. Dan McDonald's still with me. So Dan's doing a flick around on various websites today ahead of our chat just to see what we might talk about. And there was one theme. There was one theme. So I'll start with Mike Dean, 52 years old these days. Mike Dean, he has had his request granted in that he won't be involved in the Premier League this weekend. Now, he will take charge of the FA Cup match tomorrow between Leicester and Brighton. But He had a degree of controversy. He gave the red card to Thomas Souček for West Ham when Souček, I guess, was tussling a touch with Mitrovic of Fulham, and his elbow caught Mitrovic in the face. Souček wasn't even looking at him at the time. And I think it's generally accepted it was an accident, even though Mitrovic hit the deck, and hit the deck in a big way as if he'd been shot. Now, Mitrovic subsequently gave almost testimony for Souček, and his red card has been overturned. But Mike Dean went over and had a look at the VAR screen and decided to go with the sending off. It was a bad decision. I mean, there are no two ways about it. It was a really bad decision. But Mike Dean has requested to be left off Premier League duty this weekend because Dean and his family have received death threats, which is just horrific. Richard Masters says here, it is inexcusable that Mike Dean and his family have received online abuse, including death threats, as a result of doing his job, officiating at a Premier League match. And then, in fairness to him, Thomas Souček, who's a really good player as well, he came out online, he said, whatever decisions are being made on the pitch should stay on the pitch. I do not like hearing about it interfering with the personal life of Mike Dean. I send Mike and his family my support. There's no place for abuse of any kind. It's in the past. I'm now focused on the rest of the season. Then I flicked over to The Guardian, the top story in The Guardian. The Manchester United women manager, Casey Stoney, has condemned attacks on her forward, Lauren James. Lauren James is a 19-year-old, and she has been on the end of racist abuse. And Stoney said, she's a very young person. She's living away from home. It's hard for me to comprehend sitting here as a white person in terms of actually being able to understand what she lives through every single day, what she's experiencing. It is disgusting. It's utterly disgusting. And she said the most upsetting part about the whole thing was that Stoney is almost not immune to being hurt by the criticism, but is almost able to water off a duck's back, which speaks volumes about the regularity at which she might receive it. Stoney herself, by the way, the manager, has also revealed she has been the subject of abuse because of her sexuality. Then I flicked over to BBC, and here we had Chris Wilder. I mean, tough as old boots, Chris Wilder. He's saying, a line has been crossed. And he said, those responsible need nailing. We've all been subject to abuse at the club. I think it's cowardly, disgusting, inhumane. Sometimes, though, it crosses a line, and it has at our football club, hence a situation we're dealing with now. And on it goes. Tuan Zabi of Manchester United has become a real go-to pylon target. I'm sure you've spotted that. And they were just me. I wasn't looking for this theme. I was about to call you. We spoke earlier, as we often do when you're on the show. And I was doing a scout around to see what we talk about. And it was like, boom, 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 boom. Take your pick. We talked to Dame Delaney last week about the Ian Wright case. You know, it's just at a really difficult point at the moment. Human beings and this technology and what it, you know, the access it gives human beings to other human beings in the limelight. And I don't see this trend turning.
No, I mean, like I said, I think I was on a Saturday maybe a couple of weeks ago and discussing, I could list a raft of other cases at the time. It wasn't there Marcus Rashford, and there was a couple of other players who'd spoken about instances. And I don't know where this goes, really. Like, you know, there are so many examples of it now. And obviously there was a time when, you know, if you wanted to get at someone, you would, you know, people had to actually write letters to the club and like go to that extra level of sort of a maniacal behavior to sort of target someone. Whereas, you know, now it's just a click of a button. And like so many of them are sort of like kids really as well, which is why it is like, I know this is a very sort of predictable point to make, but a lot of it is societal stuff. Like it's, your sport is a platform for it. But like what it says really is so much more about a broader society. Like if you, like, I mean, there was a, you mentioned the Manchester United women's case. I mean, there was a, not long ago, there was an under-17s League of Ireland final streamed between Shamrock Rovers and Cork City. It was a YouTube video, and the comments on that were horrendous as well. And one of the players effectively had to highlight that, Jesse Stapleton, and took a stand and highlighted it. But like, I think the problem is, if you were to look at, say, below the line, or like, you know, a lot of sort of YouTube videos or whatever, like some of the sort of stuff you would see about anyone, any public figure or any walk of life can be pretty dreadful. But obviously sport, the profile of it, there's a greater volume of them. And I don't know. Like, the Mike Dean was obviously slightly different, like, because Mike Dean isn't necessarily someone, I don't know, unless I'm mistaken, he's not someone who's like out there on Instagram or something, you know, having Comment Central. And was obviously certain stuff that was directed his way. But like, you kind of wonder where it is going with the social media companies, to the point, without going too political, we've obviously seen in response to the US election now and certain decisions made by certain social media networks when it suited them. But like, if you have a situation where players say are being targeted on Instagram or Twitter, where it's very easy, particularly Instagram, the way it functions is like very easy to sort of send messages to people, whether you have to follow them or not. Like, at what point did they have some kind of responsibility, or are we so far down the road, like, that, like, what power do say, other than highlighting it, right, other than wanting people to be prosecuted or taken to task, for what power do the sports stars have? Like, do they come to a stage where they say, well, none of us are going to use it anymore, we're going to take ourselves away from your particular platform, which is damaging for your platform, but like that's not really realistic. And like, so many of them as well, it must be acknowledged, like, will obviously profit quite heavily off their social media profile through, you know, various sort of brands and whatever it might be. So there's but like, it feels like the debate is getting to the point where we're going to have some kind of reckoning. Like do we need something terrible to happen before we fully take it, like, really, really seriously, you know? And the volume of cases now is quite significant. I don't know what you think, but like, where does it actually end? You know, like, where does this actually end? Because like, so, like, you're not suddenly going to wake up one morning and, you know, teenagers who are sending this stuff now, or older people are sending this stuff now, are suddenly going to think, actually, maybe this is a bad idea. You know, so clearly not going to happen when it's so easy to do it. So obviously it's some kind of regulation of the platforms needs to happen around identity or consequences.
Yeah. Where does it end? I wouldn't be optimistic, to tell you the truth. I don't think it does end. I think it's here to stay. I think it will be the same, give or take, in 10, 20, 30 years. Would you not think so?
Well, I know, I agree. Like, but I mean, I see, you know, things, a lot of things that, I mean, Manchester United have scored, we're going to talk about that in a minute, but a lot of these things are, like, you know, you think is a phase cyclical, you know, like, as in, like, is there a new social media platform or something that everyone will gravitate towards in a short period of time? But it feels like a lot of things have sort of hardened in the last decade. People probably 10 or 11 years ago were saying, oh, Twitter's going, no, you know, that'll be replaced in 3 years' time or 4 years by something else. But it's not really the case, is it? You know,
no.
There's new platforms coming along, but are people going to spin away from it completely? It's hard to say that that's the case.
And even, you know, if there are new platforms, the same abuse will still exist on those platforms.
Well, unless there's one where there is absolutely no interaction at all, like zero.
Yeah, that won't do very well.
No, it's social, anti-social media. You know, like, yeah, where you have the ability to, like, you know, you have your own sort of a page and no one interacts with you, but. So I don't know. Like, I mean, it's a very sort of it's a grim way of sort of phrasing it. But like, yeah, of course you can say with all these things. Well, maybe if you have a couple of instances where people who've been, you know, you see a couple of people being put away for it, is that what really makes people think? And of course, I would think that anonymous accounts and all that should be gone. And maybe that's what you get to. But I'm not sure if that's going to fully solve it, really, because there's a lot of people who have their names up and pictures up. Aren't too bothered about you know, being found. I mean, that's how some of them were identified in Instagram. They weren't exactly you know, they weren't exactly super sleuths in terms of how they hit their identity.
I have great faith in humanity, and also for huge swathes of humanity, a particularly dim view, you know. And so the problem is that very quickly, humans are very smart, they'll adapt. So say the overt racist abuse does result in prosecution. Pretty quickly, when Tuan Zebi makes a mistake, you'll have all the same racists, and there's no other term for them, piling on Tuan Zebi without the racist language necessarily, but the volume will be such that Tuan Zebi will feel massively under attack all the same. You know, it's about volume as much as what's said. So maybe the Ian Wright case, maybe that is tidied up a touch, but then again, the Ian Wright case, that was just one person. There's always going to be one person. Yeah. So it's really complicated, really difficult. Let's park that there for a second. Andy Mitten, editor of United We Stand, is with us. And there has just been a goal in extra time, Andy. 1-0, Manchester United.
Yes, Scott McTominay did what he keeps doing, scoring goals at Old Trafford. A bright point in a pretty awful game of football at a snowy Old Trafford. Chances have been few. West Ham haven't had, they've had one, I think. And both United played pretty poorly. David Moyes has set up not to lose the game. And West Ham got into extra time. Manchester United made several substitutes, brought on the cavalry. Cavani, Brandon Williams, and I'm going to include Scott McTominay in that because he keeps scoring, and in the 97th minute he's put Manchester United ahead. So it's looking better than when you called me and we set this lineup. I do think the FA Cup is absolutely worth winning, and it's important in Manchester United's history. And I felt that if West Ham would have won tonight at Old Trafford, given what's happened in recent matches with Manchester United dropping points against Everton after 94 minutes at the weekend, and then all those draws against Liverpool and Manchester City, and a few disappointing results given how strong United were looking the last time we spoke. So any win would be taken, I think, this evening. And there's 20 minutes left in extra time, and West Ham are going to have to do what they failed to do and touch the ball within 200 miles of Dean Henderson in the Manchester United goal.
Okay, I'm not feeling so bad. I didn't get to watch this game this evening then, so you've filled us in. We had obviously planned to be talking to you at full time and we could draw some kind of conclusion about the result this evening. Hey, let's assume for a second United see this out and they win. I agree with you, they'll probably need to, because it doesn't take much to tip the balance of scrutiny when it comes to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And look, we spoke over the last month and we agreed that United's position was very flattering, and a lot of the wins didn't have great performances behind them, and there was a sense they would do very well to hang with whoever was going to ultimately win the league. As it turns out, it will be Manchester City. However, there will be disappointment as they go on the attack again here. No, there will be disappointment, Andy, at just how quickly the title challenge evaporated. I mean, it hung around for about a fortnight and now the air has completely gone out of it again. I mean, you might have been hoping for March or April.
Yeah, I wouldn't say definitively that the title race is over. Manchester City clearly look the strongest team and they're on that incredible winning run. And that has been as surprising as Liverpool's very poor form. But City have imploded in the latter stages of the Champions League a couple of times, and that has affected their league form. I do think Manchester City will win the league. I never thought that Manchester United would win the league, but if Solskjaer's side are going to finish second and win the FA Cup, or get 10 points more than last season and win the FA Cup or win the Europa League, I still think you'd call this season a success.
Yeah.
It's been more enjoyable than recent seasons. Just to be in a title race, however fleeting, has been something new for United fans, and it's the first time that's happened since 2013 when the team last won the league. I think when City came to Old Trafford in the League Cup semi-final, they showed that the small margins belong with them. They had the best defender on the pitch, Ruben Dias. They had the best midfielder, Fernandinho, and they've got more experience of winning, and they've got a brilliant manager in Pep Guardiola. Will Ole Gunnar Solskjaer become a brilliant Manchester United manager? I don't know the answer to that. I think he's doing a good job. At some point, he's got to do a great job because league titles are expected at Old Trafford. But I think it's a difficult time for football economically. I don't think you're going to see Manchester United going out and spending £100 million in the close season. I just don't think there's the money there. That said, they're in a better position than almost every other club. And the team definitely needs strengthening, and Solskjaer knows which areas need strengthening. And we've seen, as results have dipped a little bit recently, albeit from Manchester United being at the top of the league, that this team has still got some way to go. Yeah. And Solskjaer's done well. He's moved players on. Last week he moved Marcus Rojo on. Jesse Lingard went on loan to West Ham. That could be a win-win for everybody because he's not a bad player. He could be playing in a top eight Premier League team. And he started really well at West Ham. And if he continues to do well, there's good value there. And that releases some money on the wage bill. It brings some more money in. So I think if I was giving Manchester United a report, I'd say good. It's not great. It's good. Mm. And there's been some really exhilarating moments. There's been lots of goals. The team are the top scorers in the league. They've conceded far too many as well. And I put this to Ole Gunnar last Friday and said, your team has conceded more goals than any down to Leeds United, who were 11th or 12th, and Leeds concede a hatful under Bielsa. And he said to me, yeah, but you're a Man United fan. You'd rather win 3-2 than 1-0. And I get that. And plenty of people were complaining about the football under Jose Mourinho, under David Moyes, under Louis van Gaal. But Solskjaer did actually say, of course, we'd rather be not conceding any. So there's tightening up to do there. I think question marks continue over the goalkeeper, De Gea, over Victor Lindelof. These are good players, but again, it's got to be better than good. If you want to play for one of the best teams in the world, as Manchester United should be, Stam and Vidic were fantastic. You look at Real Madrid's Varane and Ramos central defensive partnership. It was one of the reasons why they won those three Champions Leagues. And look at what Virgil van Dijk did when he moved to Liverpool and combined with Alisson. He transformed that team into a promising, improving team to title winners and European Cup winners. They're a long way off that at the moment, though.
What happened to him?
He's made too many mistakes. And he was Manchester United's best player during some very difficult times throughout the last decade. Player of the Year several times. And that got him to earn that huge contract where, as we speak, he's the best paid goalkeeper in the world. There were always worries about his performances for his national team. So his opinions about him in Spain are less flattering than they are among Manchester United fans, but he's been making too many mistakes, high profile mistakes. And when he does make those mistakes, when his confidence is hit, it's a long way back for him. The talent's still there, but if he feels that people are doubting him and criticising him, he struggles with that. Nice. And I don't think he had any problem with Dean Henderson coming in and pushing him. And Dean Henderson's done well, but if Dean Henderson is going to be Manchester United's number one goalkeeper, then he too needs a run of games. That's only fair to any goalkeeper, and not just snatches of matches in domestic cup competitions. But De Gea's stock has fallen, it really has, but United are stuck with him because he earns too much money. Nobody can close to affording the wages that he's on. And would you say he's one of the best goalkeepers in the world right now? No, he's not even close. Other keepers have made mistakes. We saw Alisson against Manchester City, and he's been a magnificent goalkeeper, but that doesn't really concern Manchester United fans. They're just worried when more points are dropped or when the team go out the FA Cup as they did last season because of a mistake by David De Gea. And they're surprised as well because he'd been so good for so long, but he hasn't been in the last year.
Yeah, for a long time now. I mean, it's at the point really where I would say with a lot of United fans, Andy, he doesn't have any credit in the bank anymore. It's been steadily eroded.
He has some, but credit is subjective. But let's just say it was at a 90% level had we been speaking a year and a half ago. And it's not now. It's dropped. Every mistake, you lose 5% of this imaginary credit. But it is real to talk about that. I can remember Jose Mourinho's credit diminishing with every defeat and every whinge throughout 2018. And if Dean Henderson started in the league at the weekend, then I don't think many fans would complain about that because De Gea has been a liability too often. Expectations are high and not unreasonably so. He's the best paid goalkeeper in the world. And maybe among United fans, he hasn't always helped himself. He doesn't do any media. No one knows what he's really like. No, it's hard to warm to the personality. But all that pales when you're performing well, nothing else matters. But when it doesn't, I've always felt that because people don't know him, doesn't make his case any easier. But I do know that when he struggles and when his form drops, he struggles. And I know that the coaches have got to work extra hard with him to get him back to the level where his confidence is up, he's feeling imperious, as he has done so often. And he's not going through a good time right now. So it's a double-edged sword. What do you do as supporters? Do you get behind him? Do you feel, does he need to feel the love and support because he built up such a big bank of credit? Mm. Or do the fans tell him straight, you're not good enough, you should be dropped, which plenty of people will do.
Mm. Yeah, catch 22. Listen, we'll let you get back to this thriller. They're into the second half of extra time, so still United 1-0 up, and I'm sure you're hoping they can see this out. Andy Mitten, as ever, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Cheers. Andy Mitten, their editor of United We Stand. Interesting on De Gea, Dan. There's a confidence issue with him, I guess. Confidence issue with everyone. We're all human beings, but you almost just would have assumed someone of his stature would have built up as a base level of resilience that wouldn't need propping up from coaches and all the external staff at Old Trafford every time he goes through a bad patch or even makes a bad mistake.
It's funny, I was thinking of almost return to our previous discussion there. Like, you know, Andy made a reference there to, you know, Manchester United fans like showing them the love or whatever. How do they even do that now? You know, like they have to do it probably by someone, like, what does he get? Like a lot of likes on a tweet or something, you know, or post. Like, if you think about it, like, there's times when like a player is very low on confidence and they walk out in front of like a full stadium and everyone's like getting behind them and chanting their name and giving them a support. You don't really have that option now, do
he
you?
Could, so he could risk a Twitter poll. Me or Henderson? Yeah. Me or Henderson? Yeah, exactly. Come on.
But as we know, so many of the social media stuff is like, they're so sycophantic to your face as such, you know, a lot of the time. And then it's only when things go wrong, like on a Thursday or something, he'd get a great response. But 10 minutes after, don't do the poll when you walk off after the Everton game. You know, like, you know, it's sort of 11 o'clock that night, go, who do you think should play next week? That's maybe a mistake. But it is true, like that sort of sense of a player that's down in his form who has the crowd to lift them out of it.
Mm.
Don't really do that now. So there's a lot of like a lot of focus on the player's individual mental strength just to almost rouse themselves from it. Particularly when these stadiums, these closed-door stadiums, are so weird, and like players can be alone in their thoughts a lot. They can't even get lost in the particularly for a goalkeeper, I can imagine, you can't necessarily get sucked into the game or the event. Like it's really a weird it doesn't come across as much on the TV if you have your fake crowd noise or the commentary or whatever, but the stadiums themselves, it must be weird for the players that are struggling.
Yeah, no doubt.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.